Hello and welcome to episode the 247th of the Internet's one and only podcast about comic books. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, and I'm joined, as always, by my friends and yours. Emily's here.
Hello.
And Chad is here.
Emily, how have you not seen this? I can't believe that you haven't seen this.
Okay, tell me about this My Little Pony movie.
Just so the listeners know, Alex is not here.
Unfortunately,
we miss him. And as a result of Alex not being here, I've been outvoted, and there will be My Little Pony movie talk at the beginning.
There's literally not much to talk about. They're launching Gen 5, I guess, sometime this year, and they put out like a 12-second teaser trailer.
No, I haven't seen this at all.
A couple months ago. Wait. And then I just saw another screenshot from a different character on Twitter, and I was like, oh, we've seen another character from this movie. Like, there's literally just like two things that have released, and I just sent Emily one of them. And you, Jean-Luc.
I have only seen stills. I have not actually seen, I didn't know there was any sort of...
And correct me if this is wrong. I did not realize that there were like different characters. I thought that it was always like...
Oh, buddy.
Twilight Sparkle and...
Oh, no. Oh,
I don't really know their names.
Okay, so...
I thought it was like the Care Bears.
Real quick, I will explain to you that while there are, like, names that have carried over throughout every generation of... multiple generations of My Little Pony, each generation is distinct from the one that came before it for the most part, except for in the case of, like, there is what is called Generation 3.5, and there was the Pony Life cartoon that came out pretty recently is considered Generation 4.5, and those contain characters from Generations 3 and 4, respectively. But for the most part, each generation has its own distinct set of protagonists, even if some of them may share names or have similarity to characters from previous generations. Because a lot of times they'll take inspiration from previous characters and use that to create new characters.
But, I mean, I guess at some point they're all just children's TV show archetypes.
For instance, the Rainbow Dash of Generations 3 and 3.5 is very different from, like, Generation 4 Rainbow Dash. Even if they share the same name, they have very different character designs and very different personalities.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a Wally West, Barry Allen type thing.
I guess
anyone can wear the mask.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to put it.
But yeah, this is the new generation is going to be Generation 5. And it is, in a lot of ways, it looks like it's going to be pretty different from previous generations. Like the naming convention and some of the, I don't know. I didn't know it was going to be a movie. I guess I thought it was going to be a TV show.
I believe it's going to be a movie, and then that's going to spin into a TV show that will span however many seasons. I'm curious, because the models for the movie look really good in motion, if it's going to all be the same assets, and the show is actually just going to be, like, really top-tier animation, if nothing else. Obviously, I have no idea what the writing will be like.
I would honestly be fine if they did this movie in, like, the 3D and then maybe did something a little more scaled down, possibly even 2D for the TV show, which seems likely, but, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm cautiously optimistic, but also, like, in a place where I don't really need My Little Pony in my life.
I mean, did you need My Little Pony in your life before, Chad?
I mean, probably not. I feel like the year it came out was a year where things weren't, like, pitch perfect, and so having a cartoon I could just watch and talk to people with online is, like, a way to distract myself was kind of neat. Or nice.
I got into two different relationships in my life because of My Little Pony, so technically I feel like I did need Generation 4 of My Little Pony, but, you know, your mileage may vary.
I split up with one around season 2, I think.
Wow.
And was like, well, this is a weird place to be in. Let's watch cartoon horses. And the rest is history.
Is that when you started? Never mind. I was going to ask questions about My Little Pony, but we should probably do other things.
I mean, I don't have any plans.
I wasn't going to drag on the pony conversation for very long. No,
that's fine. We absolutely don't have to drag on the pony conversation.
John, did you watch more of Wonder Egg?
I haven't. Okay. I watched one episode. Well, I guess I did. I watched one episode this week, but I don't have like any new thoughts on it, so I think I'm going to actually like take notes so that when specifically because Chad said he's not going to watch it until the last episode comes out, and by the time that happens in June or July, I might have forgotten like things that were interesting about
the first
11 or 12 episodes, so like I will want to remember those for when we inevitably talk about it. But I don't know. I'm watching that. The problem with that is that I have been like looking for like something that I can watch during work, and I can't watch that really because there's no dub for it, so I can't like.
The dub is slowly but surely coming out. I actually watched the first two episodes of, or the first three episodes of it, and I can confidently say I think the dub is pretty good, but it's. I mean, depending on whether or not you want to wait for it, like, it'll be a minute before the whole thing is dubbed.
Yeah, I mean, and I may just put it on, if it is, like, already starting to come out, I may just put it on pause until it's all out, and then I can do that.
They released the first two episodes, and then I think the other ones are being released, like every week subsequent, so,
Actually, that might work out, then, in terms of watching.
Yeah.
In a week until the last episode comes out.
Because what episode are you on now?
6.
Okay. Yeah, you could feasibly wait if you wanted to.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it sort of depends on where I'm at. But I've been looking for, like I said, looking for something to watch. So I've been trying a bunch of different things here and there.
Yeah.
I have a really hard time sticking with TV shows, I'm going to be honest. I don't know what it is, but it's just really tough for me to like I'll watch like 3 or 4 episodes and then just be like, and then just like, I don't want to watch
you motherfuckers keep talking about Riverdale like once a goddamn week, so I don't know
To be fair, Riverdale is something that I'm obviously like, it's that I obviously like and that I'm glad I've stuck with for so long. But Riverdale is something that I watch specifically because I have friends that I watch Riverdale with, so it's like a social thing. And that's like what it's been like. Like literally since the first episode I've watched it with the same friend, and then around like season 2 or 3, one of our other mutual friends started watching it with us, caught up on it and started watching it with us as well. So it's sort of like, yeah, every Thursday, me and my two friends get in a Discord call and watch Riverdale. Unfortunately, that didn't happen this week because there was no new episode of Riverdale this week, and there won't be any more until June.
So, oh, I didn't realize. I knew that. It was skipping a couple weeks. I didn't realize it was that significant.
Well, it sort of makes sense. It's like a mid-season break, although it's not quite the middle of the season.
Yeah, it's almost the end of the season. Well, I don't know how many episodes the season's going to be, I guess.
Yeah, Riverdale seasons are, I think it's another 20 episode season.
Okay, so it's about midway then, I guess.
We're episode 8 now, so it's close.
I was thinking it was close to 10.
It's close enough, yeah, to be, you know, roughly halfway there. Although if Riverdale does, I guess I'm not 100% sure it's 20 episodes. If they want to go back to it being like 12 or 13 episode seasons, that would probably work in their favor.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be a few months before more Riverdale, which is a bummer.
Oh no, I'm so upset by this. Anyways, speaking
of, watch it. It doesn't matter to you.
I know, and you talk about it, and it's annoying because it's always random bullshit words that don't mean anything. And I'm just like, he's making this up.
How do you think I felt when you talked about Yashahime every week?
Enlightened and erect.
Chad, what would you like to talk about?
Oh, we're almost done with the Community. We're most of the way through season 5 now, which, as it turns out, is a shorter season.
Yeah.
Wow, that show goes on a journey so far. I have no idea what season 6 is going to bring. Season 4 is batshit in a kind of a really endearing way, and now it's kind of back to normal. They're just like, oh, that was when the gas leak happened, and they're just, like, hand-waving the absolute insanity.
That was, like, during when Dan Harmon was no longer part of, like, the showrunner, so things got kind of out of hand, and then he comes back in, like, Season 6, and things have sort of settled back more into, like, a normal community college atmosphere as opposed to gestures vaguely.
Yeah, I was sad when they killed off Pierce, but then the episode where like he had questions for him in a polygraph test was kind of worth him dying, because that episode is fantastic. And then I'm sad that Troy's gone.
Yeah, God, that was literally like the nail in the coffin, honestly, was Donald Glover leaving.
Yeah, I'm curious what they're going to do without him, but it's also, it's kind of nice having the characters somewhat return to a more grounded state. Like, they really did most of them dirty in seasons 3 and 4. Like, poor Britta got written to be just a complete idiot for most of it, and Pierce was needlessly kind of asshole-ish for quite a few episodes. I still have really enjoyed basically every episode of this show. It is fucking hysterical, so I don't know. I mean, Community's been long over for a while now, but I guess it gets my recommendation. It's just a really good time.
Yeah, I've watched through Community twice in its entire... Well, okay, I've watched it through season 5 twice in its entirety, and then season 6 once, because I watched through it all, and then, like, it was in limbo for a while before it got picked up by Yahoo for season 6, and so I watched through it the whole way and then watched season 6 as like finishing out the series, because Gwen had not seen any of Community, so we watched through all of it, and then I got to watch season 6 for the first time. But yeah, I still, even as up and down as Community can be, like, I still wholly recommend it because it's so fucking good.
I don't know if it, I wouldn't say it has any particular low episodes, it just has really weird episodes.
Yeah, it gets a little weird.
It dives headfirst into just kind of like wacky surrealism, which I don't always like, because, you know, there's a lot of like Adult Swim shit that's just sort of like, look how weird and random this is.
Yeah.
The difference is Community always still has really good joke writers, so even though an episode plot might veer off into just completely dumb horseshit, it's still really funny because the characters are telling good jokes, and,
yeah,
and that's why I'm here, right? So when I'm done with season 6, I'll probably say that, and then we'll have this conversation again.
Yeah.
But there we go. Community's cool.
Can I tell you about what has taken over my life for the past few days, Chad? Because John had to...
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were back yet, but can I tell you guys about what has consumed my life for the past 3 days?
Yes.
I would love to. So, Chad, you remember when I told you all about Warrior Cats and how that was great and super fun?
Yeah, we did a podcast that'll probably be out next Wednesday or this upcoming Wednesday. I could just look up the date. What is the Wednesday I'm talking about? It is the 14th.
It'll be out after this episode comes out. Yes. So I found a video game on Switch, and by I was recommended a game by a friend of mine, my dear friend, the one who drew that Onward drawing that I shared with you.
I like that one.
Yeah, my friend who drew that recommended me a game, and it is called Cat Tales, and it is essentially if Warrior Cats were Stardew Valley, and I am having a blast, I'm having a lot of fun, and I foolishly thought that I would not be able to have a green cat, but after a while of playing the game, I found out that you could get, like, basically different skins for your cat, and if you, like, if you earn up money and buy them. And so I managed to get one that is like a green tabby color, and I love it. So I am a green tabby with like a spiked collar, and I'm living my best life. I've joined Mystic Clan, which I didn't know, but apparently the Kickstarter for this game, like, one of the things was that you could put your original cat character in the game if you pledged enough money or whatever. And the clan that I chose has the most cats that were designed by Kickstarter backers, which is why one of them inexplicably has horns and one of them wears like a plague doctor mask, but he is like the healer cat, so it kind of makes sense. But why does he have a beak mask? Nobody knows. But I'm having a great time. I'm romancing my clan leader, who is my girlfriend right now and will be my wife. I have already bought the ring. I just have to get her heart level up to a certain color before I can actually pop the question and we can have a marriage ceremony. And it's great. It's really fun. You can like hunt for prey and like fight with members of other clans, and there's like a whole main plot that involves like restoring the power of the guardian of the forest or whatever the fuck that means. And I've been playing it nonstop since I bought it Thursday night because I was gonna play it right before I went to bed, and then I stayed up for the next 3 hours playing this game.
Oh wow.
It is great fun. It's really fun. Especially now that I found cheat codes on the internet, and there's one that allows you to like, it gives you a skill that temporarily ups your speed to like 600%, which makes it really easy to traverse the whole map. So I'm having a good time. I'm living my best Warrior Cats life.
This is more wholesome than my last gaming outing, which was VR chat, and I'm using an anime girl avatar, and Cameron was taking
pictures. Are you using an anime girl avatar, or that, like, whatever Vivzy Pop property that you stole the
Oh, no, I switched to an anime girl avatar, because I actually had to work to get that one, and I'm like, this one is me now. I've swear to God I've sent pictures of this.
You may have. I sort of look upon all of your screenshots from VR chat with confused amusement.
That's fair. But anyway, so Cameron was taking pictures. We were at a space station, and he decided to take an upskirt shot and sent that to me. And so I now know that the character is definitely thoroughly skinned and animated. And so that was a little it was funny. You? I'm the one out front.
You're the one in black.
Yeah.
Yeah, that tracks.
She's cute. I like the patterns on the jacket and the leggings.
She looks like a Ruby character.
She really does. I had to make like mixed potions to get unlock her in this weird unlock anime girl by mixing potions place. And we wound up being
That's
there for
great.
Like an hour and a half trying to figure out all the recipes. And so that's what we do in VR chat. Apparently, it's very stupid.
I really wish that I had a VR apparatus so that I could one day join in your extremely horrible VR chat adventures.
You can play without one, but it definitely adds a lot to.
No, I'm not gonna half-ass VR chat. Yeah. I gotta whole-ass that shit.
The other day, it was a couple weeks ago now, my brother's like, so you're going to get like a normal avatar in this? And I was like, no, I have a normal avatar. She's an anime girl.
I mean, what's the point of VR chat if not to like live your best life? And Chad's best life is as an anime girl.
It seems to be the case.
I have a Neopets focused Twitter account, and one of my mutuals has made VR chat rigs of like their Neopets characters, and I think that's great, and I love and support them.
We are still talking, my brother and myself, like trying to model a Quick Trip, which is that gas station.
Yes,
right?
Do it.
And it And oh man, I'm so into that idea. And then just taking like different avatars and like putting the Quick Trip uniforms on them, because he used to have a really good a Goku one that worked at, I want to say, either Kmart or Taco Bell. And then that avatar got deleted, and he doesn't have it anymore.
Rip.
And he's like, I want a Goku avatar again, because he's just like, he's so stupid, like his facial expressions, he's always so happy. But he doesn't want just a normal Goku avatar. It has to be like a weird one. And it's like, oh, what if we did like a Quick Trip Goku? That would be fucking great. So there's ideas. The problem with all of these ideas, of course, is that executing them takes a lot of goddamn work.
Yeah.
I apologize to the listeners. I feel like I've had nothing good to contribute this episode other than just like my horse shit. Ponies.
That's what
in
we
VR
have you
chat.
On the show for, John. Your horse
shit. It's been really extra horse shit this week, though. Goddamn. I have the decency to be embarrassed by myself, if it helps.
That's fair. I mean, look, I love having you on the show because you always have something to talk about when I don't have anything to talk about, which is useful when you're trying to fill an hour of content and don't talk about comics until the 30-minute mark. I mentioned this to you, to both of you. I watched the first couple episodes of Harley Quinn this week as part of my quest to find a TV show to watch.
Remember you mentioning this? Maybe
I do.
Chad and I talked about it.
Just maybe I was just away and then did not read all the.
You might have seen it and then wiped it from your mind because I didn't like it very much. So.
Oh, that tracks. That's very sad.
I guess I should pose a question to you then, because, well, I like. Does it get much better after the first two episodes, or
I mean,
because Chad said he was hooked from the, like, it gets better, but he was hooked from the beginning. So like,
I was also kind of hooked from the beginning, but I would suggest giving it a couple more episodes. And then if you just like, if you're just not feeling it, you're just not feeling it. It's okay for like something to not be for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now that I've looked back in the chat, I do see this now.
Yeah, it just felt try-hardy to me in terms of like it feels because I saw the trailer for it back in like 2018 or whatever, and then you and Chad were really positive on it, and I have another friend who really digs it, and all of you are people who like, generally when you like something, it's like, oh, there must be some merit to this, and I'm not saying there's no merit to it. Because I think there probably is, based on like listening to you guys talk about it, but just based on the first couple episodes, it feels a lot like what I expected it to be, which is that it's too edgy for its own good and just tries to fill as much space with swears and blood as possible.
I would say it gets. I think it evens out a bit more around episodes 3 or 4, and it becomes a little more, a little less crude and a little more clever. But it's always crude. Like, that never goes away.
Yeah, the crudeness is definitely always there. But I feel like it does sort of tone that down. Or at least, like, I feel like it tempers it a little, if not necessarily tones it down. Like, it becomes less, like, I don't know. Like, it becomes a little better, I guess. I was going to say it becomes less stupid, but I don't know. There's plenty of stupid stuff in this show, but I feel like it's stupid in, like, a good way a lot of times.
Once the characters kind of, like, get to know each other a bit better, they establish a rapport, and so, like, they can tone back on the cursing and the blood because they have, like, you know, this dynamic now that they can rely on for jokes, but... I really like the first two episodes because lots of gore and lots of swearing, and I'm just like, fuck yeah, this is me. This is like Drawn Together, but without all of the pedophilia jokes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
so it's
I'll
not
give
as good
it...
as Drawn Together.
Fuck off.
Maybe I'll give it 2 or 3 more episodes before I just rewatch Battlestar Galactica or True Detective or something.
No, I still need to finish season 4 of Battlestar Galactica.
Have you guys seen The Leftovers?
No.
No.
God, actually, that show is amazing.
One, that might be one that I should give a shot to, because I've heard... I remember you... I think it was still running when we started the show, and I remember you talking about it on the show.
I know the...
read a lot about it.
I know the hot girl from the bad Death Note Netflix live-action movie is in The Leftovers, so... That's like a point in its favor.
All of the acting in The Leftovers is really good. I cannot speak to the hot girl in the bad Death Note live action movie.
I've heard that she is good in it, so like it's just a, you know, the Netflix live action Death Note movie was bad.
Yeah, there tend to be a lot of talented actors in Netflix original movies.
Yes.
The problem with Netflix original movies is that they're Netflix original movies,
not yeah.
that they have bad casts.
I will say with The Leftovers, the first season is pretty different from 2 and 3. The first season is, like, really fucking bleak. I think it's great, but I've definitely met people who are like, so when does this show get good? And everyone's like, oh, season 2. And it's like, okay, I disagree there, but I will say, like, season 2 and season 3 are probably better because it finds a way to balance a bit more of humor and heart with the story it's trying to tell, where season 1 is just like, what if everybody is really upset and smokes a lot of cigarettes and wants to die? And I'm like, well, that's cool. I mean, some of those things are nice. Some of those things are relatable. I can dig this. We can make this work. Yeah, but then 2 and 3 are a little more lighthearted while still maintaining a very, like, strange, bleak outlook and some weird, surreal magic shit in the background. It's a fantastic show.
Cool. Well, maybe I'll give that a shot as well if I bounce off Harley Quinn again.
The girl I'm talking about plays Jill in Leftovers.
Oh, Jill was great.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that she was, like, a decent actor in the movie Death Note. I just thought that the movie as a whole was bad, and they gave her, like, a bad part to do, so...
I feel like she deserves better than the Death Note movie, but also actors gotta get paid.
Chad, have you seen Death Note?
I've seen the
anime.
Yes.
Okay, well, I can tell you more about, like, her part in the Death Note movie later and my opinions on it. Because
I
don't think that you will or should watch the 2017 Netflix Death Note, because it is bad.
100% not happening. I'm not honestly, good. I think the Death Note anime is kind of held to a little higher regard than it needs to be. Like, the first season's pretty good, and then season 2 is kind of fine. Like, I don't know. I definitely lost a lot of the spark once they made some character decisions in that one.
I know exactly, specifically, what character decisions you're talking about. But also, one of the reasons I never watched Death Note to begin with was because it had a reputation that made me think that I wasn't going to like it. But then I actually watched it and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good, except for, like, it has, like, the Twin Peaks problem of, like, season 1, really good, season 2, mostly not good, but then, like, that last episode of season 2 is, like, mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe that. And then we can move on to comics.
Yes.
One unpopular opinion, Code Geass is Death Note, but better, because it has mechs.
I've never watched it, but I've heard of it.
Code Geass is kind of a fucking mess, but it does, like, this similar, like, this character's kind of evil and really smart. It has a superpower thing that he gets to use and fucks lots of things up. Nice. But then also there's mechs.
Nice. All right. Is it comics time?
Comics, we can talk about comic books. Comics time.
As of recording, we're at 30 minutes, like, on the dot.
Yeah, it'll probably be about that, too, in the final version, maybe a little less. That's for us to know and the listeners to find out. It was a good week for comics, I'm gonna say. I read
pretty decent.
I read what feels like a decent chunk of good comics this week. From, you know, a few different publishers.
Start with something that I don't think anyone else read?
Yeah.
I read, there was an Agretzko comic that came out this week, and it was called, hold on.
We're continuing with anime. We did it.
I didn't see this. Is it good? Should I read it?
I mean, if you've watched the show, I don't really think that it's, like, necessary. It was called, like, I can't find the exact name, but it was like a Gretzko meet her life or something. And it was cute. It was fine. It's just sort of like a side story, and it doesn't really seem to impact much of like the show as it stands. It just sort of, it's called a Gretzko meet her world. And yeah, I thought it was fine. It was cute, and it seems to sort of exist in the world of either season two or like post season two. So like, yeah, that's, it was fine. I don't think anyone else read it, and I don't really feel like anyone else needs to read it, but I but I didn't not enjoy reading it because I like Gretzko and I like, you know, what it's kind of going for, and this was just sort of more of that.
Yeah, I also like Gretzko, so
I'm the only one around here that reads most of the like licensed books if they ever come out.
I mean, I try to stay away from them because, you know, there's a certain,
I mean, a lot of times they're not great, and yep, you know, you're valid for not necessarily caring. I just saw that there was an Gretzko number one out this week, so I decided to check it out because I ended up having enough time.
If we're going to talk about licensed comics that nobody else read, I did read Star Wars: The High Republic number 4, which I Alex probably read this as well, but he is not here.
What did you think? Tell us, you know, for Alex. You know what?
I think Alex and I both haven't liked the last couple issues of this, but I think that this is a high watermark for the series so far. There's a twist in it with one of the characters that I think is pulled off really, really well. It does like the classic thing where it like starts off on a flashback scene and then it does the twist right after the flashback scene, just to make sure that it, you know, hits you as emotionally as possible. And all of that like works really well. And there's some really good, like, and it feels like a really good character payoff after the last three issues. It sort of feels like the end of the arc, but then they set up like more of this art, like this specific story. So like it kind of takes like what is a small stakes kind of thing, like small, like mostly like interpersonal relationship stakes kind of story, and then like resolves that and then blows it up a little bit, which is cool. So I'm actually excited for the next issue. After the last two, I was like kind of waffling on whether I was going to like stick with it for much longer. But this issue was a really nice turning point in terms of its quality. So I am now, I've gone from indifferent to excited for more of this, which is a good spot to be in, I think, for Star Wars comics, because nice. Definitely not always the case. Cool. So I'm happy about that. But I know there were a bunch of books that we all read this week. Was there any, I guess, like, did anything stand out to anybody in terms of quality or lack of quality or interesting things to talk about?
I liked,
we could bitch about Noctera.
You read that?
I didn't read Noctera.
I decided to love myself.
Oh.
I thought about reading it. And then I just didn't do it. But, Chad, if you're going to be continuing to read this, I may jump on.
I'll go on the journey with you, too. Yeah. I sort of
shouldn't.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to read issue 3, I will listen to you say what issue 2 was like and then read it.
So the big crux of issue 2, as far as like Scott trying to bookend his writing with like some level of, I don't know, literary thing, is the concept of heaven and hell. Is this thing like, because with it starts with a flashback and everyone's concerned, but not that concerned, and the parents are praying, thinking, oh, maybe this is a good thing, like in the Book of Revelations or something, right? Maybe this is how we're all gonna go to heaven. And then at the very end, it's like, no, actually, we unlock the door to hell, and it's like, congratulations, you fucking 15-year-old buffoon who is in a 30-year-old's body writing comic books, or 40, or however old he is. You did it, though. You did the thing that's not clever. Everything else in between is more nonsensical bullshit that is this comic and his writing. But, like, that was what stuck out to me, was just this reoccurrence of is, are we in heaven or are we in hell? Da-da-da! And, I hate it. I hate it so much.
Well, that's not a shock.
Oh, also the old guy was lying to everybody. He doesn't actually know how to save the world, but he did probably end it. It is probably his fault because he was looking for a new universe. Because get this, there are 9 of them.
Wow.
9 universes?
Yeah, he's like, I'm pretty sure there are 9. And I was like, weren't there 9 in Dark Knight's Metal?
No, there's 52 in
the I'm pretty universe. Sure that there are specifically mentioned 9 in Dark Knight's Metal, and I think that was a reference to his Batman shit.
Is Noctera one of them?
Yeah, this is the fourth is that, one. He was trying to find the first one, but he accidentally found, like, the 0 one, which was hell.
Ah.
And I was like, this sounds like Dark Knight's Metal. It's this stupid.
Well,
good job.
That's not a surprise coming from the acclaimed writer of Dark Knight's Metal.
So that's that comic. I'll probably read issue 3.
Were you more or less positive on Geiger number 1, the other post-apocalyptic Image number 1?
More positive until it turned into a superhero book, and I was like, man, fuck this one too.
Yeah, Jeff Johns couldn't help himself. He just had to turn his Image book into a superhero comic.
I didn't dislike it.
It's like a perfectly competent Jeff Johns comic.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Yeah. It's
boring.
It's not exceptional in any way. It's just like a story of like, oh, a nuclear bomb went off, and in the last moments before the nuclear bomb went off, this guy like shoved his family into a shelter but couldn't make it in himself, and now he lives in the nuclear wasteland as a, you know, guy who turns green and shoots lasers, I think. I actually don't remember him shooting lasers.
He threatens to, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
I have two big issues with this comic. Go on, Emily, then I'll bitch.
I was going to say, I like to think that he can't actually shoot lasers, and it was more of a situation where he was just bluffing to say that he could shoot lasers, because I like to imagine that if he had been called on that bluff, he would not know what to do. But go on with your bitching, Chad.
So the big crux and the emotional moment here is that he's protecting the bunker he shoved his wife and kid into, and when the world is safe, he can let them out. Problem is that radiation ain't going away until after everybody's dead, because that shit stays around a while. So two, why can't he just kill some people, but not with, like, the normal ways he does it? Just take their suits, open the door, give them some goddamn radiation suits, and then they can go be a family somewhere else. Because he's clearly got the means to do that. He's got fucking superpowers. Also, we all know that that vault is going to open in issue 5.
And
everyone in
dead.
It's going to be dead. And Jeff Johns is going to think he's a clever bitch. But he's not.
That is very likely to happen. Also worth noting that, like, I don't know, man. Maybe, like, if you're thinking about paying for Geiger number 1, maybe don't financially support Jeff Johns, especially right now, after, you know, everything that's come out with, like, his apparently very racist treatment of cast and crew on the set of Justice League. So it's really, like, it's fine, but aggressively not worth paying for.
I don't know that I knew that he was involved in all this. I have kept very on the, like, perimeter of all the DCU bullshit that's been going on.
Yeah, so he basically, like, left writing comics for DC in, like, 2015 or so when his Justice League run ended.
Uh-huh.
To go, like, spearhead a bunch of CW and DCEU stuff. Like, TV shows and movies. And he was, like, one of the writers on Justice League and apparently was, you know, acted in, like, racist ways in casting in terms of, like, the Krypton TV show and also in terms of his treatment of, and now I feel bad because I'm blanking on the name of the actor who plays Cyborg. But
Ray Fisher.
Ray Fisher on the set of Justice League. So, I learned this week that also he propositioned a 17-year-old at a con. So
yikes
it's been a bad
bikes.
Huh?
I said yikes on bikes.
Yeah, it's been a bad week for Geoff Johns. And he released a fine Image comic that's, you know, not going to do a ton to remedy his reputation. Maybe if it were amazing, but it's not.
Well, I had heard about some of the, like, racist stuff that happened with, like, the Justice League movie, but I did not realize that the man who wrote the comic that I read was involved with any of that.
That's fair, because...
I've heard you guys mention the name Geoff Johns on this podcast before, but I just, you know, like, there's a lot of comics people.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know... People are being very quiet about it and trying not to associate with Geoff Johns very much anymore, so...
Okay, you know. I see.
there is that element of it, and, you know, he's basically been shepherded away from DC to do Image books, so...
I see.
You know, take that as you will. But yeah, that's Geiger number one. I don't know, I probably won't read the next... Like, I probably won't read the next issue. I felt like I should read it so we can talk about it on the show since it's a number one, but it didn't do anything for me, really.
Sure.
The other Image number one, which seems like it's more of an anthology series, because I don't even think it's maintaining the same creative team for the next issue, was Silver Coin number one, which is written by Chip Zdarsky.
I like and, this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think to date, this is the most compelling argument for Chip Zdarsky as a writer. But, at least from what I've read.
Hasn't he written some good books? I don't really know, like, I've heard his name float around, but, like, I know some of the things he's written, but I haven't read any of them.
So, Chip Zdarsky's was primarily known as an artist. He drew he's the artist on Sex Criminals.
Oh, I thought he wrote that, but maybe it's just because...
Oh, he's writing,
That's
Stillwater?
A Matt Fraction joint, yeah.
Okay.
Which I enjoyed. He wrote The White Trees, which was all right, and he did Kaptara really back in 2015, which was pretty fun, and then didn't go anywhere.
The reason I probably thought that he wrote on Sex Criminals is because I just saw his name associated with it, and then we've been reading Stillwater, so I just sort of...
Yeah, no, he broke out sort of like as the artist on Sex Criminals,
okay,
and then parlayed that... You know, rightfully, because Sex Criminals is fucking fantastic.
That's what I've heard about Sex Criminals.
Writing and drawing for primarily Marvel. And some of his Marvel stuff has been okay. I really liked his Howard the Duck book. But, like, his more recent...
He did some Archie stuff, I think, huh?
That sounds familiar?
I don't know. Anyway.
That makes sense. Anyway, I actually thought this was a really good sort of one-and-done story. Conceit of it is basically there's this band who are like kind of a mediocre rock band that plays to empty bars, and the frontman, sort of guitarist, singer, star finds this old silver coin in his mom's belongings that was apparently her lucky coin, and it, you know, propels them to success. And then it's kind of like the monkey's paw curls, and the success comes crumbling down on him quite literally. And I thought it was, like, a really strong concept. Not, like, particularly groundbreaking or anything, but a really strong setup for a story. And was really, like, sort of carried by the sort of, like, slice of life feel that the rest of it had. Especially as he's, you know, being propelled closer and closer to his dream of... getting out of this shitty small town and living a life of fame as a rock star, and coming to terms with the fact that his bandmates are like just happy living in this small town, being friends with each other and sometimes playing gigs on the weekends. And I just love that character dynamic and the way that it sort of like pushes him to be more and more self-destructive as he sort of comes to terms with the fact that everybody else except it feels like everybody else except him is content with the way the world is.
Yeah.
And I love characters like that, and I think that Chip Zdarsky did a really good job bringing this character to life in this issue. So I was actually a big fan of this as a one shot.
A brief googling has revealed that the other reason I associated Chip Zdarsky with writing is because he did the writing for the 2015 Jughead comic that I was a big fan of.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That feels like I didn't read that, but I think it was really good. Okay. Well, maybe I should read it then.
I liked it. I was hoping that they were going to bring more of that into Riverdale, which they didn't, except for like maybe a little bit aesthetically, like Cole Sprouse's Jughead sort of looks a little bit like the updated look that they gave Jughead in that comic. But apparently Cole Sprouse actually read a bunch of that run of Jughead in order to prepare for Riverdale, and I guess it probably did not come in handy at all because they did not bring anything in from that comic at all. But yeah, I thought this comic was okay. I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to a second issue.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought the guitarist was a little too much of an asshole.
I feel like that was the point, though.
I couldn't tell, like, if that was the coin kind of amplifying.
Well, I said the point, not the coin, but yeah.
Well, yeah, because, like, I just feel like his bandmates probably wouldn't hang out with him if he was, like, this much of a dick. Because, like John said, they're very clearly like, just having a good time. They enjoy playing gigs on the weekends and writing music. Like, it's just a fun thing they're doing, whereas this dude is clearly like, no, we should get signed by a record label. We should move. We should, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
I will say, Chad, as somebody who's dated multiple people that were in bands, like, that did a bunch of like local shows and stuff sort of similar to what this looks like, it felt very true to life. It feels like there's always like one guy who's kind of a dick, and he's usually a dick because it's always a he, and he's usually a dick in like a different way depending on the band or the person. But like, there's always one guy who you're like, why do you guys even hang out with this dude? And it turns out that they've, like, known this guy since, like, middle school, and everybody's just friends with him, and nobody wants to say, hey, you're being a huge dickhead.
Yeah, I feel like there's, like, just enough, like, ancillary dialogue to indicate that it's kind of one of those scenarios where it's like, these are, like, three people who have, like, known each other for a long time and care about each other a lot in the way that, like, you know, when you have, like, a very, like, when you have, like, a long friendship that is very meaningful, that, like, when somebody's, like, kind of being an asshole, you're either blinded to it because of being their friend, or you care about them in a way that, like, you don't want to, you know, ruin it by broaching the topic to them, especially
and, or a like lot of times there's who, like a sunken cost sort of where like you're like, I've been friends with this guy forever, like I can't just like kick him to the curb even though he is a total asshole.
I think the thing is too is like when they do start having success, like the other two are excited about it, like they like at least initially, and then I think that at that point, it's more like the coin talking than it is him. And the coin is like maybe amplifying the way that he feels. But it's not like he's trying to be an asshole to these people. I don't think.
Chad, it's like how Light Yagami was already an asshole, but then, like, when he got the Death Note is when he really became, like, a genocidal maniac.
I suppose. It's just, like, I'm looking through the artwork, and he's always scowling or brooding or yelling, and there's just, like, no artwork of him even neutral-faced. And you're just like, man, this dude is a fucking prick. I did like it, though, and I understand, like, I've been to, you know, a lot of local concerts,
right?
Have you
never had, like, a friend who was just a dick, and you kind of question why you're even friends with them?
Yeah, they were online friends, and I eventually stopped being friends with them, but I suppose it did take a while, because there's, you said, the sunk cost fallacy.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
It's the kind of thing where it's like, I've definitely had friends like that. I've definitely been that friend to some people at some points in
my
life. I
probably have too.
Where I've just been like absolutely miserable. And that's why that may just be why I latched on to him so much, because it's like, yeah, like I've been in places where I've been extremely dissatisfied with my life and the course that it seems to be on. And sometimes I've acted that out in ways like that have made my friends feel hurt and shitty. And that's what this guy does. And obviously, like in basically all those cases, like it's ended up like we've worked it out and it's been okay. But like this is a case where there's basically from the moment he picks up the coin, there's no more chance of working it out anymore, because it basically dooms him to that moment at the end where he's sort of, you know, resigned himself to playing as a backup guitarist for a disco band that he fucking hates because it's the only way he can have a successful music career. And
can I say real quick that I have a lot of opinions about the rise of disco in that era and the way that it was, the way that other people acted about disco, including like the disco sucks type of stuff that we saw in this book. I'm not going to get into it, but I want everyone to know that I have thoughts and opinions.
Yeah.
Continue.
That's right. No, and just like ends like he ends up like the coin causes the place to burn down. I don't know. I've said this already. I really dug this. I think the coloring is amazing. I think there's like a bunch of like really, really strong pages where they're in the club and there's sort of like that, like those moody, like pinks and purples and blues. But then there's like also those like, there's those moments when they're playing and like this, it's all like red and black and messy and it just like feels like a metal cover, or the cover of like a rock album or a metal album, and just like conveys so much of the mood just through those colors. It's really fucking effective.
Part of the music sequences reminded me of one of my personal favorite comics, the IDW Gem and the Holograms comic. Not in any sort of like it didn't resemble it stylistically, but there was like a like it really set the mood for the music, and that was something that I experienced. It was something that I experienced reading Jim and the Holograms, because they tried to put some of that effort into, like, giving a vibe to the song as it was happening. Yeah.
Which is so important in comics about music, because you obviously can't hear. And also something Scott Pilgrim also does very well.
Yes. Can I tell you, there was a question on Friday, as of we're recording this, Friday the 9th episode of Jeopardy that was about Scott Pilgrim, and nobody got it. And
that is a tragedy.
It was very sad. I was upset. And even the, because I don't know, you guys probably don't keep up with Jeopardy, but my wife and I are Jeopardy gays. So like we watch Jeopardy like, We have Hulu live TV specifically so that we can watch Jeopardy episodes after they have aired. And they have been cycling through a bunch of guest hosts since.
Is it still Aaron Rodgers?
It is Aaron Rodgers currently. And he even seemed disappointed in the panel of the panel of players when nobody got Scott Pilgrim.
Yes, that is fair. Just to end it off, it looks like we're getting issues for this from Kelly Thompson.
Who also wrote on the Gem and the Holograms book that I was just talking about.
Looks like Jeff Lemire and Ed Brisson both have issues with this coming up as well.
Jeff Lemire, our boy.
Our boy Jeff Lemire. So that's exciting. I'm excited for more of this. And we've spent a lot of time on Well, I guess we talked about like four or five comics now.
We've talked about a few comics.
We have. But there's a couple other ones that I do want to get to. Did Emily, I know that you read the first two issues of The Swamp Thing. Chad, did you end up reading these or did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Well, I am curious. My thoughts are more or less the same as they were when Alex and I talked about the first issue. So I'm curious what you guys, if you guys are enjoying this or not.
It's cool.
I liked it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I think the it's the first real Swamp Thing I've read since Justice League Dark.
Justice League Dark.
He was in that, and so this is pretty different than that. Yes. Different in a good way. It's not completely stupid.
Yeah.
I was, I kind of like the idea of, like, there's, like, Swamp Thing, and he's, like, the green, and the it plants and stuff, and then it's like, oh, but there was this one guy, and he's, like, the desert, and he's oil, and he's kind of a similar creature, and it's like, oh, yeah, you could really, like, take this concept pretty much fucking everywhere. Like, I'm on board. It's like, I don't know, like, avatar bending or something, but, or elemental stuff in general, right? You know, we can have some fun with this. I'm curious where it goes, because I feel like, as far as, like, character progression, not a lot has happened in these two issues, other than we've, like, established the main guy and, like, what he's doing. There's just, I feel like not a lot of ground has been covered, which is kind of surprising, because most comics want to just move 10 miles an hour, or 10 million miles an hour.
I like the pacing in this book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is not something I say a lot about comics.
Yeah, like, it's like, no, well, we're going to go at a steady clip, we're going to enjoy the ride, we're going to build some tension and actually make you care about these people before, like, we put them in real danger, and it's like, oh, good storytelling, yeah, I'm down for that.
Good storytelling, what a marvel from a comic book.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I have really enjoyed, like, how reserved it's been so far. And also just, like, some of the, like, and this is something because I've been reading Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run recently, but it feels like it's, like, very inspired by it, but not directly cribbing from it in terms of, like, a story about this character who is both human and not human at the same time. Mm-hmm. In this case, like, quite literally is, like, still retains his human form, which is not normal of a Swamp Thing character. But is, like, slowly coming to terms with the fact that he is also, like, this swamp creature that is in tune with all of the, like, life on Earth. And I really like that aspect of it. And, like, Chad's absolutely right that not much has happened in terms of that progression so far. But it's one of the reasons I'm really excited to, like, stick with it and see what that progression ends up looking like going forward. Because this is also only a 10-issue series, so it's sort of got, like, a defined end point. So, but I
love a miniseries.
Yep. I've really, really dug it so far. Speaking of miniseries, we're at the penultimate issue of Fear Case.
Yeah, I didn't
issue 3 coming out.
Realize.
Yeah.
I like Fear Case.
I do too.
I like it too, and I think this is a really good. It's in a really good spot heading into the last issue, also. With this issue, it's sort of like been it's felt like a slow burn, even though it's only been 2 issues of, like, building to this point where everything is just totally off the rails, goes totally off the rails in this issue. And one of the characters being, like, totally consumed by it, and ends up, like, it's revealed at the end that he was given the Fear Case. And so things are, like, totally off the rails in terms of them actually being able to investigate it, I guess. So
it's a really good, like, going from worse to worse, right? Like,
yeah,
that trope,
exactly.
Of, like, going from bad to worse. And I'm really excited to see where it goes, because, like you said, it's in a really good spot for its climactic issue.
I also love that this was, like, and this is, like, kind of a small thing, but I love that this issue was non-linear in the sense that, like, You see them together, you see the two detectives together at the beginning, and they have, like, a sort of a falling out where they're, like, where over whether or not they're going to continue investigating it or just, you know, take tomorrow off and then retire happily. And you see them, like, split paths. One of them wants to continue the case, one of them doesn't. And they both have, like, this moment separately where they're like, ah, fuck, man. I should go apologize. And then you see, like, the rest of the issue play out from his perspective, and you don't really know, like, what's happened to his partner, because the rest of the issue is basically him just, like, showing up to work, realizing his partner's missing, and then being beaten up outside of a prison, presumably for overstepping his bounds. And then the latter half of the issue, it sort of, like, picks up where you left off the previous night with the other character and sort of is enlightening as to what happened. And I really loved that, like, narrative device Big fan of this. Really excited for the final issue. Really cool. Just sort of like a really cool crime comic. In and out. And then Dead Dog's Bite number 2 also came out this... If you guys have more to say on...
No.
Okay.
I mean, I like it. I'm looking forward to what happens with it. That's really all I've got.
Dead Dog's Bite number 2 also came out. Chad, I know that you did not remember this at all. Did reading it jog your memory, or...
Yeah, though it's, once I saw the narrative device, I was like, oh, it was this one. That first issue was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I didn't really like this issue.
I liked it.
I feel like I couldn't tell if it's trying to be serious or funny, because like there's just a series of events of the girl trying to like, you know, solve this mystery, right? And it's like everyone around her is so comically incompetent or just comical, and it really takes away from what that first issue was like kind of setting as a tone and a mood. Like, this is a huge whiplash.
Can I say, the briefest of moments, I was pretty sure that the mayor character was supposed to be some sort of robot.
Yes, I was convinced of that. Also.
I wasn't sure.
I was very confused, and I did think that that was what was happening, was that they were going to reveal that this was just a pre-programmed robot with a few phrases, and he was not expected to actually be able to interface with any sort of constituent.
To be honest, I'm still not convinced that isn't the case.
Not disproven. I'm just saying that is the vibe that I got, and nothing 100% confirmed or nullified that possibility.
Yeah. So this is a really weird issue, both like Chad said, there's a lot of whiplash, but also just like a lot of the shit that happens is odd.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, the first issue was very grounded.
Yeah. Except for the narrator.
Except for the narrator. It was very grounded in like these few characters and like this recent tragedy that happened to them. This issue is like, so this entire town's economy is based around making peppermints. It has that whole weird scene with the mayor. There's the bit where she goes to visit her mom at work, and she brings spaghetti for them to eat, and they're very clearly just dumping a whole bottle of ketchup on the spaghetti and referring to it as gravy the whole time.
Yeah, that also
fucking weird. What the hell?
Like, yeah, and I can't. It's one of those things where it's still too early to tell if this is like, if this is a scene where it's like weird for weirdness' sake, or if it's just like a narrative device for the writer to tell you or indicate to you that something is off.
Yeah.
And that, like, this is some sort of, like, it just, like, if this is just supposed to take place, like, somewhere, like, outside of our reality, in this sort of, like, weird, like, off-balance town, I guess. I don't necessarily have a problem with that if it is only coming up in, like, these sort of, like, small ways that it's, like, not real, that it's not, like, based in our reality, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like that horror movie that involved the demon... It follows.
The sex demon.
The sex demon. Yeah. This probably a succubus, but
which is what will happen to you if you have demon. Sex. Yeah. Now, this is why I'm. That was when I became a Volcel. Was when I watched that documentary.
That makes sense.
I mean, I would high five that demon as I saw it walking towards a victim that wasn't me. Like, yeah, you go get him, girl.
As long as it's not walking towards your last sexual partner, I guess. Because that would that'd be bad news for you. Or wait, no. Well, maybe not.
I mean,
I'm good.
There's at least a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, correct. Yes, that's true.
It either is or isn't.
Yeah. It's also sort of like Riverdale in that way, in that like it clearly takes place out of time and space and. Any way that we would understand or recognize.
One thing to say about Riverdale that we didn't say last week was that there was a moment where, like, a character said, I'll Be Home in the Dark or whatever, which is the name of, like, the book that was written about that serial killer that was written by Patton Oswalt's wife or whatever, and it was just a really on-the-nose reference, and I didn't bring that up when we were actually talking about Riverdale.
If we were to bring up every weird thing that happens on an episode of Riverdale, we would be here for
We would be a Riverdale podcast.
That's true. We would be a Riverdale podcast.
Nobody wants that.
That is also true. I think overall I liked this, and I'm really down to read more of it, but it is, like, Chad is absolutely right that it is a lot of whiplash. It was, like, tough to process that this was even the same book in some ways.
I can totally agree with that. I want to think that the overall weirdness will be paid off in some way.
Yes, that is the hope.
Because, like, I enjoy the book so far, so I feel like I have hope that it's going to pay off. I just don't know what that will mean.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not that hopeful just because I've read comics before.
Well, if you can read Nocterra number 3, you can read Dead Dog's Bite number 3.
Yeah, that's true. What'd you guys think of Bliss number 6?
Same thing I've thought about Bliss since issue 1, which is, damn, I wish this was good.
I
don't think this is bad. I just, like,
I don't think it's bad either, but I wish it was good.
I am kind of, you know, like, I'm enjoying the ride. I don't necessarily, like, I don't think about Bliss too much in between when I'm reading it, but, like, I'm kind of here for it. So, I mean, that's more than I can say for a lot of comics.
That's fair. It's still, like, trading so hard on the strength of, like, the conceit of the story.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
The narrative device. When, like, I don't know. Like, I read this issue, and I just, it feels like one of those issues where it, like, really feels like it should be, like, a big emotional payoff where you learn this, like, big fact about the main character's dad, which is that he got clean and then came to save his son and accidentally shot his wife. And, like, it's supposed to be, like, this big emotional reveal. And I just, like, watch it happen. I'm like, that's another thing that happened in an issue of Bliss. I don't feel anything either way. Like, I'm like, oh, that's shocking.
Honestly, it wasn't even that surprising given some of the other, like, plot turns in this.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I saw them setting that up, I was like, oh, I know how this goes.
As soon as the wife was behind the bad guy, I'm like, oh, that's what's happening here. And it's one of those things where there is so much, like, I love this as a story of, like, a character who has, like, overcome a very, like, damaging addiction. And there's a segment of society that, like, refuses to allow him back in and to allow him, like, any degree of repentance, considering, mm-hmm. like, what he's done. And are just, like, very obviously, like, this book is, like, indicating that they're terrible people for, like, not wanting to, like, let this character redeem himself. And I, like, am absolutely right there with that. Like, I love that as, like, thematic messaging. It's just that the actual, like, human story of the book doesn't land. Which is why, like, I want so desperately to actually like this and read an issue like this in it for it to have that emotional impact on me. And it just doesn't land because it just hasn't come together in the 5 issues prior.
Sure. It's a comic with, like, really good ideas that needed to be, like, mapped out and then edited better before executed.
Yep. Absolutely. I think that's the, like, it feels like it needed, like, one more pass over the draft before it got published.
Yeah.
Which I understand, with the way that comics are made, can't always be a reality. I just wish that this had gotten there.
I have one question.
Yes.
Did anyone else think that the new character that they've introduced, I don't remember her name even, but, like, she's on the cover of this issue. Did anyone else think that the illustration on the front of this issue made her look like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez?
I would have to
look at it real quick for me, please.
All right, I'll pull it out of the recycle bin.
Jeez.
A little bit?
Maybe a little bit.
If you just glanced at it real quick, you might think that it kind of looked like her, which is how I felt when I, glanced at it for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez looks like a lot of attractive late 20s.
I mean, sure. That's fair. So. That's a fair assessment.
But yes, especially with, the scales and stuff, yes.
Sure, it just,
I can see that.
I, kind of glanced at it, and I was like, oh, she kind of looks like AOC.
Yeah. I can see it.
Okay.
I don't know that it's intentional, but...
No, I don't think it was intentional. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't the only one who saw that, basically.
I had to have you point it out to me, but yes, I see it.
Is there anything else that, anyone else read?
I read Green Lantern number one. I don't know if either of you read this.
No.
You
said I could skip it, so I did.
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, you can absolutely skip it because it's, I don't think it's bad. I just think it's, competent. And I don't think that either you or Chad are interested in reading competent DC books in the way that I am interested in reading, competent DC books. So, I didn't
not
feel like...
Not for Green Lantern. Maybe for somebody else, but, I'm just
not
sort of...
for Green
I'm
Lantern.
Very medium on Green Lantern.
Okay, that is totally fair. This pushed some buttons for me in the sense, I do like Green Lantern, although, more Hal Jordan than John Stewart. And John Stewart is the main Green Lantern here. And I, like John Stewart well enough, but, all the Green Lantern I read growing up was Hal Jordan. But this is, the conceit of this book is, they're having an intergalactic summit where all of the different star systems are coming together for the first time and sort of deciding if they want to allow the Green Lantern Corps to continue existing as a... But deciding if they want the Green Lantern Corps to continue existing as sort of an extrajudicial policing force that is sort of self-appointed to the galaxy. And the execution of it is mixed, but good enough that I enjoyed it. And then while this is happening, there is a new Green Lantern who is apparently 11. And she, in the way an 11-year-old with Green Lantern powers would, picks a fight with some people she probably shouldn't pick a fight with.
Womp womp.
And so it's there's this sort of action scene happening in the background, that is they're trying to stop it to prevent the negotiations and everything from falling through. But there's enough here that I enjoyed that I'm going to continue reading this going forward. I enjoy this as a sort of, and I haven't read Green Lantern in a while, so I don't know what it's been like, but I enjoyed this more, this broader scale to it where it's not just about the lanterns and the other lantern cores, but about the galaxy writ large and the impact that they have on it. And not just the impact that the 17 human Green Lanterns have on it, but the core as a whole. So there's some interesting ideas going on here that I enjoyed that, I want to continue with. But yeah, that is the last book I read this week. I read Suicide Squad number 2, but that's not worth mentioning.
I read King Tank Girl and it was fine. The main plot thing that has been going on is that while Tank Girl was crowned king, Booga or whatever her kangaroo boyfriend's name is, I don't even remember, but he found the sword in the lake, so he was also the rightful king of England. So, and mind you, the whole plot was that they were trying to find a rare action figure that was supposedly buried in the ground somewhere in England, and they've gotten wrapped up in this this king versus king sort of thing. But they fought until they were both tired and didn't feel like it anymore. And they found the action figure that they were looking for during the fight. And it turned out that it wasn't even a real action figure. It was a fake. And so their whole quest was for naught. And, they vacated England. And that was the end of the story as it goes.
Cool.
I think there's another issue coming also, out, but
that will also be the end of the episode.
Yes.
We got through a lot of comics, which is totally fine by
so me. Many comics.
So Alex will be back next week. Emily will most likely be here, but maybe not. Probably.
And then definitely not the following week.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, mix of hosts here and there, but for the next couple of weeks, but shows will continue. Also in the feed, a couple days after this comes out, you'll be able to hear the
Warrior Cats episode
that Emily and Chad recorded. And do you guys have anything else you would like to plug before we hop off for the evening?
The first chunk of my MLP fanfic has been posted on filmfiction.net. If you type in My Little Warhammer, it should show up. It's probably that one. It has Twilight and an orc, and they're standing next to each other shooting and killing some Tyranids. It's artwork I did. It looks kind of like shit, but, you know, you work with what you got.
You do work with what you got. All right, cool. Well, thank you all for listening, and we will be once again in your ears same time next week.